call name 6-1197, Miles B., and how do you pronounce Michael J.'s name?
Krzyzewski.
Krzyzewski, thank you.
It's spelled phonetically. Conventional spelling and pronunciation, yes.
According to my notes, Mr. McClellan, you're going to have 15 minutes. Then Mr. Schroeder, is it?
Schroeder.
We'll have 10 minutes, and you will do the rebuttal, Mr. McClellan. And Mr. Sosny, you will be representing the sheriff. Thank you. You may proceed, Mr. McClellan.
May it please the court, I am Gordon McClellan of Cullen, Liston, Pines, and Bach of Madison. With me today is Scott Schroeder of Murphy, Murphy, and Schroeder Racine. Together we do represent the appellant Michael J. Krzyzewski, who is also here in the courtroom today. As noted, I will argue the first issue on behalf of Mr. Krzyzewski, and Mr. Schroeder will argue the second issue regarding the equitable questions of waiver and estoppel. This case comes to this court by something of a tortured course. In the circuit court, the primary issue seemed straightforward enough. That is, where a deputy sheriff had appealed to arbitration the termination of his employment by the sheriff, and where an arbitrator decided that the termination was without just cause and ordered the reinstatement of the deputy, was the provision in the collective bargaining agreement in effect between the county and the deputy's union, which allowed for the arbitration, which is otherwise permissible, void as a matter of law because Section 5921 provided for direct appeal to the circuit court of the county's decision to terminate the deputy. Circuit court got a little off track in its decision, asking whether a sheriff and a deputy could contractually agree to arbitrate. In fact, neither a sheriff nor a deputy have the powers or the rights under Section 11170 to enter into a collective bargaining agreement. And that is important to the case because the collective bargaining agreement is in effect between the county of Ozaukee, not the sheriff, but the county, and the union representing the deputy. It is not a private contract entered into by the sheriff and the deputy. Circuit Court concluded that the arbitration provision was void as a matter of law and vacated the arbitration award, which had reinstated the deputy. That decision was timely appealed. The primary issue was briefed thoroughly by the parties when the matter reached the Court of Appeals, but then the Court of Appeals certified to this court an issue that had not been in the Circuit Court and had not been argued initially by either party to the Court of Appeals, and that was whether, in fact, when a county establishes a civil service system by ordinance to govern the disciplining of deputy sheriffs, as contemplated in Brown County, whether that system takes precedence over an element of a collective bargaining agreement that provides the alternative and otherwise permissible opportunity to arbitrate. And as Ozaukee County correctly pointed out in its brief to this court, it hasn't adopted a civil service system under the statute. Rather, the county simply, in its own ordinance dealing with discipline, reiterated the steps for deputy discipline that was set forth in 5921, which has since been numbered as 5926, but has not changed in substance. The WRC has the responsibility for determining subjects that are mandatory, permissive, or illegal subjects of bargaining. And for many years, the WRC has concluded that termination of an employee is a mandatory subject of collective bargaining insofar as remedies which may be available to that individual. Arbitration has long been regarded as one of those remedies. As long ago as 1973, this court said with respect to a school teacher who had been dismissed that an arbitrator could certainly follow the collective bargaining agreement and reinstate that school teacher.
Mr. McQuillan, let me interrupt you if I might and ask you, how do you distinguish the holding in the city of Janesville case from this particular case?
Well, two things. First of all, Janesville was just wrong. coming on the heels of Brown County and Heitkamp versus Worsing that had been decided by this court a few months earlier, I think most people in the labor community were somewhat taken aback that this court had not reviewed Janesville. But Janesville is also distinguishable on a number of grounds. First of all, as we pointed out in our brief to this court and to the Court of Appeals, there's a strong distinction between a police and fire commission and a law enforcement committee in the following ways. First of all, the police and fire commission is an independent entity. It is not regarded widely, at least, as an agent of the city and is certainly never party to nor subject to a collective bargaining agreement. Not so the law enforcement committee of a county, or sometimes called the grievance committee, or sometimes called the sheriff's grievance committee, a variety of names, personnel committee. That committee, in this instance in particular, is made up of elected officials of the county. That is to say, all county board members. That county board has previously, by ordinance, entered into and adopted a collective bargaining agreement. So where that collective bargaining agreement provides for arbitration of discipline, it's binding on that committee because it was made in part by that committee, unlike the police and fire commission situation in the city of Janesville and other municipalities. But more importantly, the mere fact that there is an alternative route of appeal shouldn't make a bit of difference either to a police and fire commission or to a law enforcement committee. Once they've reached their decision on what's going to happen, they're done. In any event, any law enforcement officer operating under, whether it's a municipality, city, county, village, always has the right to go to circuit court. What difference does it make then to the law enforcement committee or the police and fire commission whether there's also a route of appeal to an arbitrator?
Well, don't
their job is done.
Don't we have statutes that are basically parallel or corresponding one to the other? In this particular case, we're talking about 5921. In City of Janesville, we're talking about 6213. Aren't they parallel provisions?
They are parallel in many respects, but some one of the primary differences is the manner in which the adjudicating body is selected. And I don't want to mislead you. I still think Janesville was wrong. But in Janesville, at least, the statute provided that the police and fire commission would be appointed by the mayor with rotating terms, five-year terms. No more than three members of the police and fire commission could be of the same political party, and they operate independent of the municipality that appointed them. That's not so for the county board. The county board committee is all elected. They are all political animals. They can be removed from the committee at the whim of anybody on the county board as long as they have a majority of votes. It's intensely political.
Was the neutrality of the police and fire commission something emphasized by the Court of Appeals in the City of Janesville?
I'm sorry, I missed the first one.
Was the neutrality of the police and fire commission something that was emphasized by the Court of Appeals in their holding in the City of Janesville?
It was not emphasized by the court, although we certainly argued it rather vigorously to the Court of Appeals and to this court in this case, that there is a neutrality that's more guaranteed by the manner in which those members of the commission are appointed and by which they hold their office. That is to say, they can't just summarily be booted out if someone doesn't like their decision. Not so for the law enforcement committee. If the political party that happens to be in the ascendancy in the county, which may include the sheriff, doesn't like the results, they can be changed. They can be changed immediately.
Mr. McQuillan, does the whole county board approve the collective bargaining agreement?
In most instances, yes. It's typically approved first by a committee and then adopted in ordinance form by the entire county.
Did that happen here?
To my knowledge, yes, it did.
So you have an early ordinance setting one proceeding, and then the later ordinance, that is the collective bargaining, setting another.
Well, no, I don't think it set another. I think it set up alternative procedures for what happens after the committee is done. You'll recall, in this case, as the circuit court decision points out, the law enforcement committee did not sit as a hearing body. It sat as a grievance committee to review a grievance that had been filed. There was no evidentiary hearing in the strict sense of the word, or actually in any sense of the word, before that law enforcement committee. The sheriff had acted, a grievance was filed, and the law enforcement committee, after a very perfunctory presentation by the sheriff and a review of the documents that had come before it, summarily affirmed the decision of the sheriff. Now, the circuit court faulted the deputy for not availing himself of the right to a hearing under 5921. But he didn't have to under the collective bargaining agreement or the ordinance then in effect. He had a choice. He opted for one. The county followed along. In fact, the sheriff followed that very procedure and then suddenly found themselves without the ability to arbitrate after the fact. It's as though you were had gone to lunch every day for 20 years and suddenly found out that lunch was illegal. We didn't know it was. Nobody knew it was. This court has for at least 30 years decided that statutes must be harmonized where it is possible to give effect to both statutes. 11170 is one of those statutes that needs to be harmonized because it expressly provides that bargaining agreements of public employees may bargain for the wages, hours, and conditions of employment of their members. Actually, members of the bargaining unit, they don't have to be members of the union. At the same time, 5921 or 5926 sets up a statutory procedure for the discipline of sheriffs. You can easily harmonize those two statutes by simply giving effect to the statute up insofar as the hearing goes to the committee, and thereafter it is simply an alternate route of appeal, either to the circuit court or to arbitration. In fact, our history of arbitration in this state has long favored that arbitration, even where there are statutory remedies, provided both sides have agreed to arbitrate. It takes away some of the burden of the circuit courts. It presumably provides both parties with a person who is knowledgeable, or a panel of persons who are knowledgeable, in the subject matter, rather than requiring the circuit court to learn each new subject matter as each case comes to them. And it's worked super for years. I tried to find the earliest arbitration case involving a deputy sheriff, and I couldn't do it because it's way back somewhere in the hoary past, and people don't even have records. But it's at least 30 years that people have been arbitrating the discipline of deputy sheriffs, and suddenly we find out it's illegal, even though up until September, I believe, of 93, whenever this case was, everyone thought it was perfectly okay, including Ozaukee County, who put it into the collective bargaining agreement and who went to a hearing and did it. This harmonization is something that the circuit court chose pretty much to ignore, having concluded that it was illegal, but it didn't seem to make any effort at all to try to harmonize the two statutes. You can read the decision without much help. And then the Court of Appeals, as I pointed out, sort of lost track of that fundamental argument and got sidetracked by something that was written in the decision in Brown County. And I think it was a lowercase, if you will, civil service system rather than uppercase civil service system, which would be in the statute. Oddly enough, if you follow the statute on civil service, which was 5907 parens 20 at that time and is now 5952 parentheses 8, expressly provided for in that civil service statute is a grievance procedure and employee discipline procedures. So it's pretty clear that that there was no concern on the part of the legislature to allow these things to go forward. One quick last thing, there was a great deal made in earlier briefs regarding the failure of the legislature to enact an arbitration provision. And there's some suggestion that intent is manifest. The intent is manifest there that then you can't arbitrate. But in fact, the opposite inference is just as strong. That is, the legislature is presumed to have had knowledge of the existence of 11170 and the fact that people have arbitrated for many years, so why bother to put it in the statute? It's already there. just leave it as it is.
Legislative Reference Bureau notes would seem to run counter to what you just said, though, would they not, in regard to Senate Bill 66?
No, because the Legislative Reference Bureau really blew that one, and I'm happy to tell you what they did. The Legislative Reference Bureau, unfortunately, said that the statute that was proposed would have superseded the statute that was then in existence. That wasn't it at all. It never suggested anything about superseding the prior statute. All it was going to do was create a statutorily derived basis for entering into arbitration as an alternative. There was no need to supersede any statute. There's several cases have noted in the past that 1170 doesn't specify that you can bargain over subject X or subject Y. Well, 1170 doesn't specify any subjects other than the broad categories of wages, hours, and conditions of employment. So for the Legislative Reference Bureau to have suggested that that was going to supersede the statute was a faulty premise. Everybody who argued that point then proceeded forward on that faulty premise, and I would assume that reached a faulty conclusion. Thank you,
Mr. McQuillan. Mr. Schrader.
May it please the court. Imagine, if you can, Mike Krzyzewski and the sheriff sitting down to play a game of cards. They're going to play five-card poker. Each of them is going to get five cards, and whoever has the winning hand wins. Before they were dealt the cards, both of them agreed nothing is wild. The sheriff said nothing is wild. Mike Krzyzewski said nothing is wild. They play their cards. Mike Krzyzewski has three aces. Mike says, I win. The sheriff says, no, you lose. I have two pairs. I have twos and threes. Twos are wild. Therefore, I have four of a kind. I win. In this case, you can see what happened on the waiver issue. It's fundamentally unfair. And I feel that the focus on this case has been on what happened in 1995 with the Jamesville decision, when it was the Court of Appeals reached that decision, instead of between January of 93 to June of 93, when the parties were going through the arbitration process. The Ozaukee County admits in its brief that the state of the law at the time that the parties entered into the arbitration process was that arbitration is a valid means to handle discipline cases. At that time, in 93, Mike Krzyzewski had to make a choice. He could do one of two things. He could either go through the law enforcement committee, which was made up of county board members, or he could go to arbitration. He picked the route to go to arbitration as a strategy move. Which forum was he going to establish the record, the evidentiary hearing, upon which any appeal would be made? He picked that route. The county agreed to that route. We have a waiver on the record. We have what amounts to a stipulation on the record where they said, for this case, we agree that the arbitrator has jurisdiction. We have a number of cases which state that it's fundamental to the area of arbitration that if a party does not raise an objection to the jurisdiction of the arbitrator, that they lose that. In other words, use your objection or you lose it. And in this case, they have lost it. In fact, Ozaukee County cannot come now in at this time and state that they're surprised by this. They actively participated in entering into the collective bargaining agreement. They instituted an ordinance and went through, actively participated in the arbitration, and even made a statement on the record that they waive any objections to the jurisdiction of the arbitrator. And in this case, they, surprise, surprise, they lost. And now, since the circuit court has the case for almost a year and a half, during that time period, the Jamesville decision comes down in 95, and all of a sudden they see, gee, I guess we could have objected to this at the time.
Mr. Schrader, what about the argument that the waiver that you're characterizing was not a knowing and intentional one because of the misunderstanding in the law that was cleared up by the City of Jamesville case?
Yes, they raise that issue. That issue goes to the core of this case. They can't have it both ways. They can't say, hey, we didn't know that it was illegal at the time the decision was made to arbitrate or not. Because if that's the case, there was no law in effect, Janesville shouldn't be applied retroactively years before when the parties have no idea what the law is going to be. In 93, when the decision to arbitrate was made, at that point in time, the state of the law was that it was legal. Now, if they want to have it the other way and they say, well, we didn't know about that, they did know about that. And it's found in their own argument. The January of 93, Krzyzewski is suspended. We enter in arbitration and have the hearings in June of 93. Ozaukee County states that the Janesville Circuit Court decision was the first time that they became aware that they had these rights. That was decided February 18th of 94. The Circuit Court decision, again, it's not published, doesn't have precedential value. The arbitrator issued his decision March 4th of 94. March 4th, after the Janesville Circuit Court decision was decided. The very cases that are cited by Ozaukee County on this issue say, if you have knowledge or constructive knowledge. Ozaukee County had constructive knowledge of the Janesville Circuit Court decision February 18th of 1994. The arbitrator's decision was issued March 4th of 1994. They still had a chance to raise an objection. In their brief, they argue, well, we didn't really know about it until some other time in March of 94. That doesn't matter. I could come in front of this court and say, I don't know anything about the Janesville Court of Appeals decision. That is irrelevant. The relevance is the date that the decision is decided. So even assuming that argument that they can't knowingly waive, they lose either way. They want their cake and they want to eat it too. In any event, Ozaukee County has really waived their objection three different ways. They've waived the objection by, first of all, stating on the record that they waived the objection and agreeing to the jurisdiction. The second is by failing to object. And the third is by active participation. They were involved in selecting the arbitrators. We went through and crossed out the arbitrators off of the list. They could have brought the issue of arbitrability in front of the arbitrator. Arbitrators decide whether they have jurisdiction. So they had all of these opportunities. The Janesville case does not apply. There's been no argument even made or on the issue of whether or not Janesville should be applied retroactively to this case. They haven't even attempted to do that. The reason is they have no argument on that issue. They're saying, let's look at 95, 96 as this case wound its way up, and all of a sudden they say, gee, surprise, we have a case now that we can use in our favor. The focus should go back to 93 at the state of the law when the parties were involved in this. In any event, you should find that there was no wild cards in this case. You hold an entity to their word. Mike Krzyzewski put his law enforcement career on the line. He was living or dying through that arbitration. He won. He risked his career on that decision, and now you need to pull the party to their word. It's fundamentally unfair. This court has a power in its equity powers to hold waiver and estoppel apply. There's clear case law that it applies, and in this case, you need to hold a party to its word. All kinds of entities that are involved in arbitration potentially could look at this case and decide, hey, we'll lay in the weeds and wait and see what happens, and if it turns out that we lose at arbitration, we can always come back and object to the jurisdiction. So this case is very important on the issue of arbitration as far as other cases. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Schrader. We will now hear from Mr. Sosnick.
May it please the court, my name is William Sosny, and I appear on behalf of Sheriff Milas, Ozaukee County, and the Law Enforcement Committee of Ozaukee County. I respectfully submit that counsel, in response to Justice Kirk's question about how he distinguishes the decision in the city of Janesville, did not address the point. He, I think, with all due respect, talked around the issues that I believe the City of Janesville case established. And that is specifically that we are dealing here with a statute passed by the legislature, which is in effect the law in Wisconsin, as it applies to the procedure within which sheriff's departments are to discipline, amongst other things, their deputy sheriffs. That language is clear on its face, and that language was adopted by the County of Ozaukee as an ordinance, which is referred to in the record, specifically section 4.168 of ordinance 73.1. There's no dispute about that, and I don't think council even addressed that. The language is clear. I think it was worthwhile for council to point out the confusion, at least, that was raised by the Court of Appeals in asserting this, in certifying this case to the Supreme Court, that they, I think, misinterpreted or perhaps were confused as to the issue of whether or not there was a civil service commission or not. We're not dealing specifically with the ordinance in the context of this argument because the statute itself and the ordinance are identical. And that provides specifically that I think the issue that the City of Janesville addressed, and that is when there is an irreconcilable conflict between the statute and the collective bargaining agreement, notwithstanding, obviously, the efforts and an attempt to be made to harmonize the distinction between that difference. When the language itself in the statute makes the agreement void and unenforceable, the statute must prevail. And I think that's clear. Council, in his argument or in his brief, I don't think distinguishes that or makes the point, suggesting that one of the differences or the distinctions in 6213 sub 5 as opposed to 5921 sub 8 sections 1 through 6 is that under the county situation we're dealing with a body that is an elected body versus one, in the instance of a police and fire commission, where the commission itself is appointed by the mayor. I think that that really is a distinction without a difference, but in practically speaking, I don't think it's grounds for a reversal of the Janesville decision. As having been a public servant and a person that participated as a district attorney for a county for a long time in my career, I find it very hard to believe that this court can assume or presume that a county committee is going to automatically rubber stamp the sheriff's department or the sheriff's orders. If anything, quite to the contrary is true. And that, I think, is the practical experience that that prevails. Notwithstanding that, council did not mention the fact that the statute itself still provides for an appeal to the court, to the circuit court. That is a protection, and really what we're looking at, I think, ultimately, is the question of due process. In other words, when a deputy is disciplined, does he have that opportunity or the right, obviously, to determine whether or not just cause backs that up and can support that? I submit that under the statute, as it is the law in Wisconsin, that is provided for. I submit with all due respect that in the situation that we have here, it is exactly on point with the type of situation that the Court of Appeals was talking about in the City of Janesville, namely that the statute on the books, as it was, had an irreconcilable conflict with the wording of the collective bargaining agreement.
Mr. Sosny, why can't you harmonize 111.70 and 59.21 in the manner that was suggested by Mr. McQuillan?
You can't do it for the reason being that, in effect, what it does is it moots or it takes away, eliminates the role of the law enforcement committee's role of deciding on whether or not the discipline recommended by the sheriff should be implemented. In effect, if the law enforcement committee acts as it did here, and council had pointed out that the Mr. Krzyzewski, in this instance, chose not to avail himself of the opportunity for a hearing before that committee. They made a decision based upon the evidence that was submitted to them. And in effect, what Mr. Krzyzewski was allowed to do pursuant to the bargaining agreement was to sidestep the provisions of the statute and, in effect, make moot or to no avail the action of the law enforcement committee. And that, I submit, is where the irreconcilable conflict comes in. That is completely contrary to the intent of the statute.
Well, isn't the law enforcement committee's action considered by the arbitrator just as it would be considered by the circuit court?
It is, but it's under a different standard. It's a de novo standard. Whereas the circuit court would review the decision of the law enforcement committee in the context of whether or not the decision was reasonable and just cause existed, as opposed to having another full-blown hearing looking at the matter under a de novo review, which in effect, I submit respectfully, in effect just guts the wording of the statute itself, and I submit that's why there's a difference there, and I submit that's why it cannot be harmonized with 111.70, and that's specifically what the Court of Appeals in Janesville said, and one of the reasons and criteria that they based their decision on.
Counsel, perhaps we could address the waiver issue. The certification of the Court of Appeals quotes from the transcript at the arbitration, and it quotes the county counsel as saying, "We are, for this case only, waiving our objection to arbitration. Our waiver in this case is not to be used against the county in any future grievance arbitration proceeding involving the union." It seems to me that that can be interpreted as saying, look, there may be objection to arbitration, but we're waiving any objection. We're going to arbitration. Don't hold this against us in the future. We might want to exercise our objection in other cases. So I'll participate for 2 days in arbitration. I'll wait and get the ruling, and if I find out if it's unfavorable, then I'm going to say, oh, this whole process was invalid. That's the way that it is painted by your opposing counsel, and there's something compelling to that. Would you address why we shouldn't say the county waived objection?
Yes, Justice Bradley. First of all, counsel made the statement that the record reflects that Mr. Walsh, the attorney for the county at the time, waived jurisdiction, that he made that statement. I submit respectfully that the record indicates that that was not the statement on the record, the statement that you just alluded to. What was referred to was reference to the fact that the collective bargaining agreement at the time had expired as of December 31st of 92. This, I believe, was in March of 93. And at the time, Mr. Walsh's statement was limited specifically to that issue. Notwithstanding that, I submit that the law, as I understand it to be, is that you cannot submit or waive subject matter jurisdiction. And I submit that is what counsel is asking this court to find, in effect, by saying that there was a waiver here. Just as you can't, in a court of law, whether you're in a circuit court, an appellate court, in the circuit court of appeals, subject matter jurisdiction is fundamental. And whether by mistake, error, confusion, what have you, I submit that you cannot waive that at any time. There is case law to that effect. Some of the cases that we cited in our brief, just referring to one of the Bialk case, which is a Wisconsin case, which alludes to that, that in effect you can't waive consent or be stopped from giving up subject matter jurisdiction. And when we have a situation as we have here, where there is an irreconcilable conflict between a statute and a collective bargaining agreement, that bargaining agreement is void and unenforceable, and as a result, an action which would allow a waiver of that, I think would be improper, and I think it would set bad law. And I respectfully ask the court not to rule on that basis in the context of inferring or at least identifying or looking at Mr. Walsh's statement at that time, which I submit was very limited and very specific as to that situation, as being much different and far different from the situation, as counsel suggested at least in his statement to this court, that the county waived subject matter jurisdiction. That was not the case. Getting back, if I may, to the Janesville case again, I submit again that the statute is very clear, and it's as we pointed out in our brief, pursuant to State Ex Rel Klinger versus Baird, where the court found, in effect, that you must look at, or you can look at, and should look at 6213 sub 5 and 5921 sub 8 as being one and the same. It's exactly the same language. I submit there is no difference here, but more importantly, the ordinance itself that the county passed and adopted, specifically identical, almost verbatim, word for word, the state statute. And unlike in the city of Madison, we're dealing with the state statute here as opposed to an ordinance. And for that reason, I submit that Janesville should be upheld as well. Now, counsel also alluded to, and I believe one of the justices inquired about whether or not the legislature looked at this specific issue, and he referred respectfully to the interpretation of the Legislative Reference Bureau's comments about it. I respectfully disagree with his interpretation of that. I think the court is certainly capable of drawing their own conclusions from what was referred to, but I respectfully submit that this specific issue, the specific issues that counsel wishes this court to rule on and in effect overturn Janesville, was taken up by the legislature, presented before it, and it specifically chose not to, to adopt that. To suggest that they didn't do it for the reason that arbitration was already available to them and they didn't want to confuse matters by including it in the statute, I think bypasses or avoids the issue. I submit they did it. They did what they did because they specifically did not want to include that and did not. And as a result, I think the statute as it stands is in irreconcilable conflict with the collective bargaining agreement. This is not a situation where the county or the sheriff is doing this because they're dissatisfied with the decision of the arbitrator. This is a situation where we're asking that the court, obviously based upon the decisions and the interpretations which we have asked this court to look at, affirm the decision in the city of Janesville, and I would respectfully ask that the court in so doing, affirm the decision of the Circuit Court of Ozaukee County.
If the arbitrator had reached a different decision, would you be here?
Well, I don't know on what grounds you could bring it up unless there was some appeal, but I would respectfully submit that we would still obviously agree with the position as enumerated in Janesville, that in effect that process is void based upon the irreconcilable conflict that it is with the statute. To suggest to you otherwise, I think, would not be correct, because I think clearly the issue is whether or not ultimately, regardless of the outcome, and that's why I say, and I hope that this court doesn't view this strictly as a situation where the county is upset over the decision. The issue really is whether or not the arbitration process under these circumstances with this statute is void and unenforceable.
And I guess in part that's why I ask the decision, to emphasize that. So it's your position, even if you won in arbitration, you, if allowed, you still would be asserting this issue.
Yes, Justice. The end doesn't justify the means. If it's wrong, it's wrong. And I submit that all parties should have to follow the law as it exists.
Mr. Sosny, I'm curious as to why you think that consenting to arbitration in this case is equivalent to a waiver of subject matter jurisdiction.
Because, in effect, the only way that ultimately the arbitrator obtains jurisdiction over the matter is by subject matter, the issue at hand, just as a court would obtain jurisdiction over a matter that's brought before it through a complaint and answer. I submit here, if you don't have subject matter jurisdiction, or if it doesn't exist, you can't create it. And when the statute contravenes and is clearly in contravention to the mechanism that is the arbitration agreement through which they are trying to bring this before an arbitrator, when the agreement is void and unenforceable, you can't create subject matter jurisdiction and say to the arbitrator, here, because we came to this agreement, you can now rule on this and decide this de novo when you have no authority to do so. At the time, as counsel had indicated, the decision in the WERC case had enumerated that, but that was what the decision was at the time. I submit that the subsequent decision in the city of Janesville specifically addresses that point and would ask the court respectfully to affirm that, and particularly to affirm the decision of the Ozaukee County Circuit Court interpreting that.
Your position is that they've got to follow the statute. So if they decide they want to do alternative dispute resolution of some sort, they can't do it.
Not if it contravenes the specific language and is in an irreconcilable conflict and would, in effect, as is here, take away ultimately the authority of the law enforcement committee or the police and fire commission, what have you, whatever you want to call that body.
And how does the court, the trial court, ultimately review, in your opinion, the commission's holding?
They would review it, as I said earlier, I believe, to a question presented by Justice Crooks, that ultimately they would review based upon whether or not, on the evidence submitted at the hearing, their decision was reasonable and supported by the facts and whether or not just cause existed.
And how would they review the arbitration decision here? As they did, what was the standard there?
They would look at the reasons cited and referred to and the basis upon which there was evidence support those decisions ultimately made by the commission or by the committee, what have you.
About the same.
As a matter of fact, as reflected in, for example, and there are a number of cases, but the justice's question brings to mind the city of De Pere case, where specifically Judge Perrins, who was then the circuit court judge reviewing the decision by the law enforcement committee or commission, in effect found that there wasn't reason or a basis upon which to impose the sanction that they did and reverse that. That was present in a number of different cases that have been cited in the briefs. I apologize, but I'm drawing a blank as to some of the others, but I know the city of De Pere was an example of that, where the circuit court did specifically look at the record, find that the reasons weren't substantiated, and in effect what amounted to that there was not just cause to justify the penalty that was imposed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sosny. Mr. McQuillan.
Thank you. There are a couple quick points. The problem with the subject matter jurisdiction is that arbitration isn't the court. Arbitration is arrived at bilaterally in the first instance through some sort of enabling document, such as a contract or, in this instance, a collective bargaining agreement. The parties agree up front, before they know what the issues are, that they will submit themselves to the jurisdiction of the arbitrator. Now, Mr. Walsh indicated on the record that they were waiving the fact that the collective bargaining agreement had expired and they were agreeing to go to arbitration. Mr. Walsh demonstrated he knows how to preserve objections on the record. If he had an objection to the subject matter jurisdiction of the arbitrator at the time that the arbitration occurred, he would have made that objection. But of course he didn't have any such objection, because the only cases that were out there, as Mr. Schrader has pointed out, specifically allowed for arbitration, including the WERC decision out of Janesville. The due process that we're talking about here is not the due process rights of the county. It's the due process rights of the affected individual whose property and liberty interests are implicated here.
Well, why do you get more or less due process your way or the county's way?
We get more or less due process by having somebody who is trained in evidentiary rulings. They're trained in the subject matter of discipline. Instead of going to a county board committee, most of whom have never had one iota of training. Mr. Sosny brings up the very interesting case of Smits versus DePere for the proposition that, well, the circuit courts can affirm. But if you go back and look at Smits, it had to come to this court twice. First came up here and this court said, you don't have the basis for disciplining him. Go back and revise, consistent with this decision, no more than a year of suspension. The city council went back and they imposed a working year. That is 365 working days. The case had to come back up to the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court, and I apologize for not knowing which. It was the Supreme Court, because I think Justice Heffernan wrote the opinion, said, when we say a year, we mean a year. Now get back and do what we told you to do. That's because municipalities are fierce advocates on their own behalf, and they want to win. And I don't care what Mr. Sosny says, if that case had been won by the county, they wouldn't have been here. And they had a way to get here. They could have brought a declaratory judgment action, saying that this provision for arbitration was illegal. They didn't have to wait to see the outcome. It was an outcome-based decision to bring the case here. There isn't any other way to look at it. The statute is not clearly in contravention with the right to arbitrate. If it was clearly in contravention, then the decision would have been made 30 or 40 years ago when these issues first came up. That is to say, 5921 at that time, which has been in effect for at least 30 or 40 years, and all of the decisions that I noted before relating to labor relations and the right of individuals to take their case to arbitration. One last thing before my time runs out. The decision is not reviewed by the circuit court on one of the issue of reasonableness. That's not there anymore. That was also amended out. But more importantly, just as an arbitrator may conduct a de novo hearing, the circuit court is empowered under the statute to direct that there be the taking of additional evidence if the circuit court is not satisfied that the case has been fully litigated. That could have happened here. And in fact, we don't know where we are in this case. The arbitrator's award was vacated, and the county presumes that means that Officer Krzyzewski, Deputy Krzyzewski, is out of job. Well, I don't know if that's what it means. It was vacated. Do we go back to where we started? And now the county does conduct a hearing, which they did not do, by agreement. And then do we go to the circuit court? Well, where exactly are we? Because we don't know what it means exactly when the arbitration award was vacated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. The court is in recess until 1:45.